I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube? That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside the chambers of Jolly Roger Studio. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're with us online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, as always, thank you for tuning in. If you don't yet know, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week at Jolly Roger Studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. That and our top three list, which is always inspired by the movie in question. That's right, and this week, the movie is the shocking 1959, Have You Seen My Panties? courtroom classic, Anatomy of a Murder, starring Jimmy Stewart, Lee Remick, George C. Scott, and the guy from Roadhouse and the guy from Jaws. Actually, we'll only say the guy from The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, that's better.
We're talking about Ben Gazzara. And who was it, the guy from Jaws in this movie?
Murray Hamilton,
that's right. Film was directed by Otto Preminger. So if you've seen it, keep listening. See if you agree or disagree with our take on it. Or even better, if you've not seen it, you keep listening to see if it's something you may want to cue up yourself.
Because you just might.
Yeah, you just might. That's the way the game is played.
Or you might not.
Maybe not. Let's do some introductions, guys. I'm Michael, along with, as always, to my left, talking about James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Savage. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I had a pretty good week.
Yeah?
I had a pretty good week. Want to know why?
Yeah.
Well, no one stole my panties.
That's good.
Threw them down a laundry chute.
They're still intact, I assume.
Well, yeah, slightly torn. Slightly
are they
stained.
White or pink?
Well, more of a high yellow. I wouldn't even say straight yellow. It's more of a high yellow stain. I did not have to drink beer out of an ashtray.
That's good.
So I had a pretty good week, Savage.
It goes nowhere.
I had a pretty good week. There he is. Did you hear that voice?
I did.
That is Matthew St. Hoodie to your left.
Oh, my God. Hey.
The patron saint of quality underwear. I'm sorry, outerwear.
Oh, not the underwear so much. I don't celebrate the underwear as much as the outerwear.
No. But sometimes a reason for celebration, I would think.
I would hope.
Actually, a question for you. Is a fishing jacket with a tie and shirt considered quality outerwear?
Oh, jeez. I got nothing.
It's a look.
It's a look.
That's out of my jurisdiction. I got nothing.
I think a lot of youpers like that up there. Fishing jackets.
Yeah, he is a fly fisher, so sure. That's classy. Sure. That's a classy fisher.
All right, excellent. Well, how about to your left then, Hoodie, Matthew St. Hoodie?
Sure.
We're talking about Max Gumbo Johnson.
Hey, what's happening?
Well, you know how I'm doing.
I should be Boudin Johnson.
Yeah, you might be Boudin Johnson.
It's Boudin tonight.
How about Trout Johnson?
I didn't cook any trout. I cooked Boudin.
Could you put trout in gumbo?
Seafood gumbo, sure.
That's not
it. It would be better in Coubillon.
Okay. See, now he's talking Coubillon.
He's talking all that.
You put fish in Coubillon, not in gumbo.
Hey, look at this. Over to your left, by the way. Well, let's get this out the way. And we're talking about the producer. Let's not forget him. Adam Jolly Rogers. Adam the Bomb Rogers.
Hi.
How you doing over there, Adam?
I'm hunky-dory.
Are you really? I have a request for you.
Oh, I do.
Now,
oh.
I want you to pay attention, okay? For the rest of the show, producer, I want you to be a good little housewife. I want you to look decent. I want you to stay away from men, booze, juke joints. And for God's sakes, wear a girdle.
If you would have said pinball machines, I would have went off on you. You know my love of pinball.
Well, let's get on with this, guys. Once again, the film, Anatomy of a Murder, we're going to do that. First thing, though, let's talk about how to keep up with us. Facebook, we're talking Twitter, iTunes, Google, YouTube channel, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Pornhub, everywhere.
Yeah, I would suggest you just go to the qfilmcast.net. Yeah, that's the one right there, qfilmcast.net. Stop on in. Let us know what you think. Maybe you can leave your review of this film or any of the other films that we've reviewed. All right, guys, you ready? Let's get into this. Let's cue up the conversation. Anatomy of a Murder, 1959, before any of us were even a glimmer, I do believe.
What?
Say what? Written by Wendell Mays, directed by Otto Preminger. Max, you've brought this name up in the past.
Somehow, even last week.
I've heard it.
Last week you said it's an Otto Preminger film, and then one time we were talking, you said, oh, like directors like Otto Preminger, you've brought this guy up. Man with the Golden Arm, Laura.
Great movie.
And this, that's what he's known for.
And Witness for the Prosecution. I think he did that too.
Yeah, there you go. Otto Preminger.
was a good one.
Selected by Max Gumbo Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And last week you said, let's talk about this film. Tell me why.
I hadn't seen it in a few years. I remember loving it when I first did see it. And I don't know if any of y'all had seen it. And I saw it pop up on Netflix again. It was gone for a while. I was scrolling through it the other night. And I said, oh, that's up. I'm going to pick that.
Yeah.
Because I want everybody to see it.
Yeah. Inspires a top three. These films we review, they always inspire something at the end of the show.
Sure.
We kick this around. I think this is good. We're turning the queue into a courtroom, and we're going to object. We're going to object to whatever we want. That's movie right. objections, whatever you find objectionable.
There's so much.
So there you go, guys. There's the film. There's your top three. Now let's get into it. First thing we do is we generally go to the critics. IMDb. And why not go to Max Gumbo Johnson? You tell me, sir. IMDb, the classic film.
Anatomy of a Murder.
What do you think IMDb gave this film?
7.8.
7.8. You're not too far off. 8.1.
I'll take that. Should be higher, but I'll take that.
Yeah, a little bit of Youper love there. Hoodie. Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint.
We're going to need a definition of Youper.
Oh, you don't get it? Oh, we'll get into it. He's a Michigander.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
He knows.
Yeah, I have a little thing on that, too. We'll get into that in a little bit. Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes, Matthew St. Hoodie. What do you think the critics gave this film, Anatomy of a Murder?
89.
It's buzzing a little hotter than that. 100% from the critics.
Get out of town.
Yeah, and there was like, I think, quite a few reviews, too.
40-something.
Yeah, 40, so.
It's not my night.
Wow. 42.
Hard sub. What do you think the users gave this film?
Well, they're not critics, Tomatoes? So they're probably more fair. 82.
91.
Yeah?
Yeah. You got 100, you got 91, you got 81, 8.1 on IMDb. So there you go. There's your film right there. All right, so let's get into the film, guys. Let's talk about a synopsis here and what you have. In the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, small-town lawyer Paul Beigler, played by Jimmy Stewart, a former district attorney who lost his re-election bid, spends most of his time fishing, playing the piano, and hanging out with his alcoholic friend and colleague. I wonder what that's like. Oh, yeah, I see.
Like
that's what
Wednesday.
Like. Yeah, like Wednesdays. Hanging out with his alcoholic friend and colleague, Parnell McCarthy, and sardonic secretary, Maida. One day, Beigler is contacted by Laura Mannion, played by Lee Remick, wife of the loudish U.S. Army Lieutenant Manny Mannion, played by Ben Gazzara, who has been arrested for the first-degree murder of innkeeper Barney Quill. Mannion doesn't deny the murder, but claims his wife was raped by Quill. So that's why he killed him. Even with such motivation, it would be difficult to get Mannion cleared of murder. But Mannion claims to have no memory of the event, suggesting that he may be eligible for a defense of irresistible impulse, a somewhat unknown version of the temporary insanity plea, which immediately catches the attention of slick downstate Lansing prosecutor Claude Dancer. What a name.
Claude Dancer.
Played by George C. Scott, who sets up shop in the coastal town to ensure no one gets away with it. Caught somewhere between his aloof Youper lifestyle and country lawyer demeanor, Beigler must keep one hand on the charm and the other on his case, which appears to be a challenge in itself, especially when the victim would much rather flaunt her panties than wear her girdle, as Beigler suggests. Nominated for several Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Cinematography, Anatomy of a Murder has been well received by critics as well as members of the legal and educational professions. In 1989, the American Bar Association rated this as one of the top 10 best trial films of all time. It has gone on to receive high praise long after its 1959 release.
Awesome.
Yeah, it kind of makes you want to see it, doesn't it?
I'd love to see this movie.
Yeah.
You say it like that?
You say it like that. Let's get on with it, man.
Right.
All right, so let's do this, guys. Let's take a trailer right here, take a break, listen to a piece of the film. We're going to come back and tell you what we thought of this one. 1959, Panty Raid. Anatomy of a Murder. We'll come back in just a minute and tell you what we thought.
He said, I fooled my lawyer, I fooled that head shrinker, I'm gonna fool that bunch of corn cobbers on the jury.
You're a liar! You're a lousy, stinking liar!
Oh, it's common knowledge in Thunder Bay you were living with Quill?
It's not true. Barney Quill was...
Was what, Miss Palant? Barney Quill was what, Miss Palant?
Until this trial's over, you're gonna be a meek little housewife with horn-rimmed spectacles. And you're going to stay away from men and juke joints and booze and pinball machines. And you're going to wear a skirt and low-heeled shoes. And you're going to wear a girdle, and especially a girdle.
Why wouldn't I be legally justified in killing the man who raped my wife?
Time out. Well, doesn't a woman sort of instinctively know when a fellow's on the make?
Oh, sure.
But that's only usual with me. With men, I mean. Almost all men, ever since I was a kid.
Did you cry out? Did you scream?
I am a protagonist, and this is a cross-examination murder case. It's not a high school debate. What are you and Dancer trying to do? Railroad this soldier into the clink?
The Q Filmcast, we're talking about 1959's Anatomy of a Murder, courtroom drama starring Jimmy Stewart and all the other players we talked about before.
Yep.
Yeah, oh, by the way, guys, didn't mention this earlier. In the show, since we're talking about monochrome cinema, classic cinema,
yeah,
we're going to defer over to our great friend of the show, Adam from the Attaboy Clarence podcast.
What?
Heck yeah. Yeah.
All right.
He's gonna wrap it up for us. Surprise witness. The defense had no idea. He's coming in.
Well, he is definitely an expert witness, for
off
sure.
The bench, and that is sustained. I sustain that. So later on, we're all set and we're all done. Adam's going to come on in and tell us his final thoughts on this one here. So listen, before we get into what we thought of this film, you know what we do. Every week we do this. All right, so did you know, Max Gumbo Johnson, that part of the controversy surrounding this movie was because it included the use of words such as bitch, contraceptive, Adam's favorite, panties, penetration, rape, slut, and sperm?
I am not surprised.
Yeah, Adam answers to all those, by the way. He kept saying, huh, what, who, where? Oh, no, never mind, I'm just joking. Did you? No, but it's quite a controversy.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about like
still
damn.
Still shocking.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I feel dirty reading it.
Right? Yeah.
I need to go jump into Lake Superior and clean myself off.
That's not going to happen.
There's a lot of trout up there.
Yeah, but this was quite a thing. You know, you look back at Gone with the Wind, damn. You know, yeah. People like could stunned. Couldn't believe it.
It was 30 years earlier, though.
Yeah, but this was quite a thing.
But this was still unheard of in a movie.
And this is way raunchier.
It's pretty raunchy. I'll tell you how raunchy it is. Check this out. James Stewart's father was so offended by the film, which he deemed a dirty picture, that he took out an ad in his local newspaper telling people not to see it.
Wow.
Come on.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Jeez, Dad. Thanks for the solid.
Right.
Fist bump. Yeah.
Yeah, but who knew who his dad was? So.
Hey, Hoodie, you'll like this one. Okay. Here's a cool fact. Did you know that the movie's poster was rated number one of the 25 best movie posters ever by Premiere Magazine?
I was appreciating it earlier.
It's not as good as The American, though.
That's Saul Bass.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
But there's something about it that is like, it's like the hook. It hooks you.
Yeah.
That's weird. It might be the orange. Something about orange posters. Anyways, did you know that Otto Preminger originally wanted Lee Remick for the part of Laura because he had been impressed with her debut in A Face in the Crowd? He knew right then she could play a young, sultry woman, even though Remick was 8 months pregnant when Preminger approached her for the role.
Yeah, she would have figured.
Sounds like she needs to keep her panties on a lot. Sorry.
Yeah, how dare she get pregnant?
Yeah, sorry. producer, you might know this, actually. I bet you kind of caught this. Duke Ellington
did
the
that.
Music, and did you know he had a cameo in the movie?
I did. He's Pi-Eye.
Pi-Eye. What a
great name. Oh, yeah, Pi-Eye. It is Duke Ellington.
Yeah. He says, okay, in the film. There's only one line. Okay. Did you know the murder took place at Thunder Bay Inn in the movie on the south shore of Lake Superior? The movie came out 11 years before there was a city of Thunder Bay, Ontario, on the North Shore. So actually, it came out before the when they were planning the city.
How did they know that?
I have no idea. Did you know that along with Crimson Tide, Independence Day, and The Dark Knight, this is one of only four films whose purely orchestral soundtracks won the Grammy Award, as well as being nominated for the Academy Award for Best Picture, or Best, what am I trying to say? Best Score.
Best Score.
Don't know if that made any sense.
No, I did not know that.
But I guess anytime you can put Independence Day alongside your film, it's quite an honor, I guess.
Yeah,
wow.
I have no idea. One last one. Did you know that the Lumberjack Tavern is still in existence today? The murder scene body outline is still there. Although, Savage, did you know it's possibly a restoration and not the original?
I might have guessed that.
I would have assumed.
Bunch of phonies. Let's talk about currency. Your film, Max Gumbo Johnson. Yeah, because, you know, we just thumbs up.
No, that's stupid.
No. No. Even though, you know, you talk about Michigan, there's a thumb. Right there.
Yeah.
See, thumb.
It's like a glove.
They
it's
actually
a mitt.
Call it,
it's a mitten.
They say I'm from the thumb, the mitten. Smitten by the mitten. Yeah, you see that up there a lot doing bumper stickers. Currency, Max Gumbo Johnson, you tell me how we're going to rate this film.
1 through 10 panties. Pair of panties. Pairs of panties.
Is that counting the pair that you have right now hidden underneath your jeans?
Nope.
Those
do not count.
The slightly torn, slightly
even though
soiled
they do feel
panties.
Quite smooth and relaxing on my okay. torso. Oh, my.
Yeah, because okay. if you whip out 11, because actually you could actually go to 11 because of that.
I could.
You could go 10 and then whip your pair of panties off and say, here's another one.
I could pull a Zoolander and do it without even taking my pants off.
He couldn't do it.
I've seen
it. I could put a Hansel.
Hansel. I've seen him do it. We're talking about panties.
So hot right now.
I am now. Yeah. Don't blame that on the bouillon. What is it?
Boudin.
Boudin. Shake your boudin. All right, so we're talking about panties, 1 to 10. I say we kick it off with the Gumbo Johnson. Going to go around the table. 1 to 10 panties, you know it. So say it.
9. 9 pairs of panties on this movie.
Ooh, coming in hot. Yeah. Hot pair of panties.
Fantastic, fantastic movie.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? One other fact, too. This movie has the best line ever. Did you know that?
Well, I don't
know. Best line ever in a movie. Now, Mr. Dancer, get off the panties. You've done enough damage. Did you catch that line?
No.
Best line ever. No, get off the panties. You've done enough damage. Heard that many times in my life. No, so nine for you.
Yeah, 9.
Okay. It's a lot of panties.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Panty raid.
I'm going to, you know what? I think I'm gonna shake it up a bit and go with granny panties. So let's go straight over to the producer. Let's go to your right. Let's go around the table. Get this out of the way. He's stroking his beard. That's never a good sign.
Never a good sign.
How many granny panties?
4.
Loser.
Okay.
Move on. Just go to the next one.
All right,
we'll
go to the next one. I was expecting a little lower. Yeah. Jesus.
Well, you were expecting his panties to be lower?
Outerwear. Talk about the underwear.
Oh.
Outerwear, talking underwear. What you got?
I'm going to go 7.
7 panties.
7?
Big, fat pair of panties there, 7.
No, size 7. What are you talking about?
Oh, you're talking. Okay. We could have done sizes of the panties.
Could
have. Let's talk about bloomers for you there, Savage. Yeah. What you got?
Yeah. It's one of those rare movies where I kind of knew something about it going in, and I usually don't. I usually try to go in blind, and I really, really wanted to go in liking this film, but it fell flat for me. I got to give it a 5.
It's a long movie, too. It's like 2 hours 47 minutes.
Yeah, loser number 2.
All right, so we have 5 panties, we have 7 panties, we have 9 panties, and 4 panties?
4.
Yeah, soiled panties from you. Okay, listen, no big secret for me. I want to get this out of the way so that way I can really just kind of let you guys go, man. But I'm telling you, these are not my wheelhouse films, Max.
Good ones?
Well, the over-stylized ones from the 50s. I think it's generally the language they speak. I just can't get invested in them. It's like, oh, officer, oh, was I speeding, officer? Well, yes, you were, ma'am, you know. A lot of it rubs me wrong. So when you tell me, here's something that you don't generally gravitate to for 3 hours. I strap myself in. I'm like, all right, long flight. Hope there's plenty of leg room. Someone bring the peanuts.
Right.
So at the end, I was like, well, there's 3 hours of my life that I really enjoyed. Good. I really did like this film. I was pleasantly surprised that I went the distance with this one. I ended up really enjoying this one top to bottom. Didn't feel long, dull. And I need someone to tell me why. I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was just a nice introduction, one after the other, of characters and things that I liked. Love the pieces at play here and how they moved around the board with one another. I just thought it was a really, really great watch. You know, it's probably too long for its own good at times, maybe. But
yeah.
Still, I'm going to give it a big, fat 7.
All right.
Could possibly even go to 8. I really did like this film. It never sagged for me. It had sag potential. 2 hours, 40 minutes?
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm down with this. This has a charm. It's a charmer. And if you've never seen Jimmy Stewart, I think this is one you could circle and say, cue it up, man, because... Yeah. This is why he has his notoriety, I think. I mean, you hear about people saying, well, you know, Tom Hanks is the new Jimmy Stewart. I can see that. These are great guys who get on screen and just have the ability to stand there, do nothing other than just stand there and charm you.
Yeah.
Like the performances, like the movie a lot. So 7, possibly 8.
I hope it goes to 8. I could go to 10.
It might. Let's see what happens. Straighten some things out for me.
32 pairs of panties.
But
Adam could go to 2.
I can't believe he finished watching it. He probably didn't.
He probably
didn't. I did finish watching it.
No, you didn't. You liar.
No, I did. I really did.
But what was the verdict?
We might have to overrule you. Right. But the reason I set that up in the beginning, because 7 for me on this one is surprising. I really did enjoy it. It might get to 8. Matter of fact, let's just see where it goes.
Right.
Okay.
So, we have a lot of panties. Did you calculate that, Max?
32.
32, that's not a bad bad set of
it's
panties.
It's somewhat
there.
Disappointing.
I don't know about that.
Thanks, James and Adam.
Yeah, thanks, James and
hey,
Adam.
Hey, man, you hate my films, and I don't hate
them. Yeah, because they suck.
That was a spiteful score.
No, it really is. Really not. I mean, we'll get into it.
Yeah, and let's do that. Let's get into it. And let's start out with Max Gumbo Johnson. You like this film a lot, as did I.
Mm-hmm.
9 for you. Tell me why this one rubbed your right.
I like the structure of it. I like the authenticity of it. I like the acting. I like the way it was written. I liked, you can't pick out one bad element of this film. Yeah, there were a lot of earlier courtroom dramas than this, but, they were so, I guess you could call them pulpy or whatever you want to call them. Yeah. They had that, trash feel, trash appeal to them or something like that. This one didn't. It took itself seriously. They didn't censor themselves. They said, look, we're going to do this as a courtroom drama. We're going to be authentic about it. We're going to use, you know, actual legal terms. We're going to really do the work. And, I mean, I know it was based off a book, but, you know, if they anybody can go take the book and say, okay, well, we can't use that. We can't use that. We can't use that because, you know, it's the Hays Code and all that garbage. So the fact that they really had the guts to go ahead and make it the way they did and put it out the way they did. And I'd give the studio credit, too, yep. for saying, yeah, we're going to go ahead and put this thing out the way it was filmed
yeah.
with the language and everything. And, you know, now it's not a big deal. But back then, wow, I mean, this thing was banned in Chicago.
That's crazy.
Had to take it to court
right.
to get them overruled to say, yeah, I mean, in the context of this film, that language is appropriate. You've got to let them show it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One little thing I didn't like was something we'll talk about later. But overall, I can't find a whole lot of fault with this movie. Everything was fantastic about it. And the one thing I really liked about it, as opposed to a lot of courtroom dramas, the story was told in the courtroom.
Yeah.
There was, out of 2 hours and 40 minutes, 2 hours of it was probably in the courtroom. The other 40 minutes was just them showing the investigation and how they go right. about their businesses, being right. lawyers and finding witnesses and tracking down the story and seeing what happens. So the story actually unfolded in the courtroom.
Yeah.
And that's compelling stuff to me.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when I get into it a bit, I'm going to agree with you completely on that. You really were a fly on the wall here. Mm-hmm. You felt like a juror.
Yeah.
You didn't know any more than what a juror would know in this situation. And that's why it really rang true in a lot of those regards, for sure. You want to go over to the producer? Anything you want to say, producer?
Sure.
What?
First of all, I am going to say the acting in here was great.
Yeah.
And it was shot really well.
That's 2 points.
That's it. Well, that's about all I'm going to give it there.
Well, you like Duke Ellington, so there's
yeah, you like Duke Ellington.
Pie up to three.
But no, this it just felt. Have you ever sat through jury duty?
I have.
It's long, boring, and you're just ready to rip your hair out. I just was going nuts. Whoa. I kept going back to having flashbacks on court duty.
Yeah, but you know, illegal parking and murder are two different things. Yeah, I mean, typically you get really right. bad cases in jury duty.
So you didn't
no,
find
mine
that,
were not bad.
You didn't find any of this interesting, or
no,
or,
it wasn't.
I give
it felt
up.
Like a long version of Law and Order.
I give up on you.
Okay,
SVU.
Okay. So it's just not your thing. It just didn't hit
no,
you right.
Just nah.
It didn't strike the palate
yeah,
right.
It was good. That's not my thing.
Okay. So not his thing. A bit long. Felt
right.
like jury duty.
Right.
Wanted to pull his hair out. Wanted to rip his panties yeah. off. But we'll talk about scenes. I think there's a couple things you can bring to the conversation.
Right.
I think there's a couple scenes you may have liked.
No.
No, okay, well, let's forget that.
Move along.
Forget about it. We need an alternate juror. Let's go over to Matthew St. Hoodie.
Hey.
Patron saint coming in with a 7.
7?
Yeah, what did you like about the film, or what do you want to talk about?
I guess really to expand on what Max was saying, I really didn't know if this guy had actually done it or not, even all the way through the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
This guy could have done it, he could have not done it, and what I really liked about it was very much so the end, where it just really didn't seem to matter
yep.
what if it was right or wrong. It was mm-hmm. just that, you know, I did my job, I got him off, that's fine, that's all I needed to do.
Yeah.
Really, I actually, and, you know, to expand on what you were saying, a lot of the jargon and mm-hmm. Dialogue from these kinds of movies really rubs me the wrong way, too.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed mm-hmm. the back and forth, especially George C. Scott. He was awesome. Loved
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know he was in this, so to see him pop in was just fantastic.
Yeah.
Like,
and
yes.
Yeah, and that sentiment goes across the board. I don't know if there was anyone here that, once again, we'll use the word sagged.
No.
The performances were buoyant. It kept the thing afloat all the way through.
Yeah.
For me, I really liked them. Definitely George C. Scott. Savage, you went
yeah.
5, I do believe. Speak it. Reveal
yeah.
what you got.
Well, and the irony is that I'm kind of in total agreement with what Max is saying and what you're saying and what Hoodie's saying. I found the acting to be top-notch,
mm-hmm.
Top shelf across the board. I found the writing to be top shelf. The cinematography was incredibly well done. You picked up on a thing. I think this is where it's hitting me. You said you liked how the pieces moved together.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what it felt like.
Really?
It felt like here are these great pieces. it just never felt like they cared about their interaction with each other.
Okay.
I never felt any tension. Mm-hmm. I never felt arrested by it. I mean, maybe captivated because I had to watch it, but there was never, it seemed like nobody cared.
It's almost like I was raped yesterday.
That's exactly right, too.
You know, yeah. Some of that was like, okay.
Yeah.
You know.
And he didn't care if he was going to be his lawyer. He didn't care if he had a lawyer. She didn't care if he stayed in jail. She didn't care if he got out of jail. He didn't care if he paid his tab. He didn't care if he put a cigarette out on his door frame.
I mean, right.
It just seemed like nobody cared. Nobody was invested. There was no immediacy to it. There was no...
No weight to it. No gravity
well,
to it.
Well, you would think, and the thing is like, this is one of those rare films that I hadn't seen, that I knew something about because of Attaboy Clarence when he did his Monochrome special.
Yeah.
And I knew something about the Hays Codes, and I knew Otto Preminger was renowned for pushing the envelope with this Hays Code thing. And,
scandalous.
Well, no, because it was kind of censorship to artistic censorship, and Otto Preminger was like, he rebelled against that, and this is like one of the death throes of the Hays Code.
Really?
Yeah, well, I'm sure Adam will get into this. Not our Adam, the other Adam.
Adam, did you know that?
There's another Adam.
I did. Let me go on.
Right. And so I was kind of excited to see this. I wanted to see this. What was the death knell? I wanted to see this movie. Mm-hmm. And really, it's, I don't know if we're just been jaded as a modern audience to these courtroom procedurals.
Yeah.
That maybe we're a little more nuanced or, you know, what was scandalous then kind of isn't to us in our modern
era.
It's
Disney
now.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. I mean, I understand what they were doing, and I liked all of the pieces. It just, nothing, there was just no weight for it.
You know, and that's the thing that I was prepping myself for. And the reason I say I don't really care for films from this era, it's because of the weightness. The weight, there's no real heaviness to it.
Right.
I was raped yesterday. Oh, you were? Here, have a cigarette. That kind of thing, you know. Some of that's like, it takes me out of the emotional impact. For me, the thing that works here, though, is the way I say the pieces work together. Every exchange between this character and that character somehow captivated me. And it's that that dialogue between them seemed very much like the score in this film. It is loose. It is buoyant. And at the same time, it made sense. There's nothing here that I thought was inappropriate script-wise.
No.
And it really kind of just paced itself from this scene to this scene. Oh, here's a great character that I can gravitate to and like. Here's a great character I can gravitate to and like. And then you get all the quirkiness in it because it's also a very quirky film.
Yeah.
And
some
I
of
think,
that felt forced to me, though.
But it felt fun to me. It also felt very much warm to me. There's not a lot of harsh edges in this film. It's very much sanded off, and it just flows. And for 2.5 hours, it did a lot of stuff right. I also like the bit players in this thing a lot.
I did, too.
Like his sidekick, the drunk guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
McCarthy.
And once again, George C. Scott. That surround Stewart here and just bring everybody into this tight group of actors doing their thing. And it's one of the best ensemble performances I've seen, certainly from this era.
What a lot of people miss about this movie, this is not only is it a courtroom drama, it's an indictment of the judicial system in this country.
Yeah, it is. Right.
It's a really strong indictment of the judicial system in this country. I mean, he's coaching everybody.
Right.
He's kind of tricked the guy into figuring out his own defense.
Right.
He said, you might want to sleep on that tonight. I'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, the whole thing, depending on witnesses,
sure,
doesn't always work, and that's all you have in this case. They didn't have the panties.
Right.
They didn't have any real physical evidence on her. All they had was what this person said, what that person said, what that person said. And you had a man's life in the balance based on that.
Well, but you also had witnesses to premeditated cold-blooded murder.
Yeah.
I mean,
You know, you can say they have that. Yeah, they do have that. But the defense here is the issue, not whether or not he did it.
No, I got you.
The defense is, did he know what he was doing?
Yeah, there's a lot of ambiguity here, too. You never really knew what anybody's intentions were.
Yeah.
And let's talk about some scenes or whatever. Why does it have to be scenes? Whatever. Let's talk a bit more. But I wouldn't mind talking about maybe a scene that really sticks with you because you watch the thing for nearly 3 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
You turn the TV off. You back away. What do you remember, Hoodie? What do you remember most about this film?
There's a couple things. The first thing that I remember when I think about the film is the back and forth between the two lawyers. How they seem to tailor how they're going to approach the case based on what the other one has just said.
Right.
I thought that was the best part of the whole thing, and really how that unfolded was my favorite part of the movie. That's not really a scene, but that was the best part of the movie. Mm-hmm. As far as scenes go, to to battle James again, I guess. The ending. I really like the ending. I don't know why. When they pull up to the park and they're expecting him to sign the promissory note that he was supposed to sign, and he's not there. So that was like the big exclamation point question mark. This guy's not a good guy. This guy's just a total a-hole. What do you do? and then that harks back to what James says, where they're just like, oh, shucks, throw in the trash. Well, on to the next case, boys.
Yeah, everything just kind of rolls off of you.
So that it bothered me, but I really liked how that ended. And that really just put another exclamation point that it really didn't matter if this case was right or wrong. That's not what they were fighting for. They were just fighting because that's their job.
It was almost like they were bored, and this is great entertainment. This is great fare.
It was all to win. It doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you win.
Do you think he did it? Because I think this film leaves that question open.
Yeah, that's Quill? What I really liked about it.
Did they get away with this, Max? I mean, did they frame
Quill? Get away with what? Quill? Or
did they get off? Did they get scot-free on murder here?
It's kind of like a Primal Fear thing to me, where he pulled,
I don't know. I mean, the question is plausible.
Of course they got away with murder.
Or was she raped, I guess
that's
what I'm trying
to say. That's the better question. That's what's uncertain.
Yeah.
Because you got to admit, that's a pretty stupid defense. Well, I just can't remember, so I must have been crazy. Is it that easy?
That case they cited from the law book that he found in the library, that was a real case. Yeah. I mean, they didn't make this stuff up. The whole movie was based on a real murder.
Yeah, but when his cellmate came in and spills his guts, I was like, whoa, okay, now we got something going here. Yeah.
Can we do top three D-bags again? I think that that guy would qualify.
I liked him. I liked him a lot. But yeah, that was one of my favorite parts, too. I thought it was going to go just... it was very tame. I think if it was done by another director, like we say all the time, that it would be very a different movie.
Yeah.
I really liked how they handled it right there, and I really thought that Jimmy Stewart was just fantastic in this. Smacking the table, throwing the chair, apologizing.
Yeah. This is not a high school debate!
Yeah, and then interjecting, even though it was great. Right. I thought it was
and
great.
I'd hate to be a spoiler here, but they did find the panties, for those who aren't aware.
Maybe they could have been planted. Exactly. That was established, Michael.
Exactly.
You know who I really liked in this film? I like, once again, going back to his sidekick, the drunk guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this was like a bit of a redemption for him. He's like, I'm this washed-up drunk lawyer, and I'm just going to stay sober for the case. You know, he ends up in Canada. And I don't know why he came back. Was he drunk? Is that why he ran through the fence, or was he just a bad driver?
No, he hadn't been driving a car.
He hadn't driven a car in 20 years.
Yeah. Just night blind.
He just couldn't see.
He was just a great sidekick, and I really believe these two were great friends at the twilight of their careers.
Sure.
And this was like the last hoorah, one more time, guys, you know, into the breach once more kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, now they're partners.
But he says, all I care about is a fishing and drinking at night with my good friend Parnell.
That's it.
You know. I like that relationship. I liked how he slept on the couch every night.
Slept. Kind of passed out.
Max, back to you real quick, though, but to wrap this thing up. Film backs away. You're looking back. What scenes do you generally recall?
This kind of mirrors Matt, that the big showdown in court where George C. Scott really, really, really goes after the wife.
Yeah.
That was just fantastic. And, you know, he's like, he's reading that letter. He says, has your husband ever beat you? And he said, well, he might have smacked me. And he just keeps hammering away at her away at her. And they're, you know, she's looking at her husband. They're trying to figure out, how much do I tell this guy? Because apparently he knows he's got a letter here. So I guess... you know, I better tell the truth. And James Stewart's running up there saying, hey, you know, you need to leave her alone and this and that.
Yeah.
And I mean, that gets pretty heated and tense.
Yeah.
It was great.
You didn't see that a lot in an old movie like that.
And I don't care what time frame this is. This is watching good lawyers at work.
Yeah.
I felt like both these guys are really good at their job, and to watch them work and to be that quick was intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
They kept up in each other, which was kept the best up part of the other. Whole story.
Yeah.
The other guy, not so good.
You mean the cheesy district attorney?
Yeah. I want to mention that
we were talking about bit parts, but I thought the judge was fantastic. I love that guy.
That was a real judge. That's the guy that told McCarthy, do you have no sense of decency, Senator McCarthy? Yeah. That was him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That was the actual judge.
Was it really? That's right. I didn't know it was that guy, but I knew it was a real judge.
That's the one.
But he seemed like such a non-actor, too. He just...
because he wasn't.
Yeah, but he came off that way that it kind of worked. You know,
I just really liked
his...
I thought he was great. I liked that he needed a little puff of smoke, and his pipe was just sitting there ready for him in the ashtray. I was like, that's great.
I liked how Jimmy Stewart bonded with him over the lures, too. Yeah. It's like, you know, and that was a play.
Mm.
You know,
I
can soft soap this guy. We just talk about lures. Yeah. We can do that.
Oh, that was great when he went in there, and you could see that, well, we think George C. Scott, we think you might want to go ahead and re-enter a plea. Of what? Guilty. So, well, let's talk about that a minute. And you can just see you can just see him get so deflated when he says, "Do you want to read the case?" And he's like, "Nah, I know it."
Yeah, I'm going to say it's my favorite Jimmy Stewart performance.
Me too.
Don't know why.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of that.
Not a big fan. He didn't stammer so much here. You know, he was like a straightforward lawyer.
Right.
Savage, let's wrap it up with your take on this. What do you remember about this film? What's a scene you want to end on?
I find the time capsule stuff most intriguing to me. You know, and I mentioned it earlier, but just how casually he put his cigarette out on the door frame. Just
that
like,
was kinda weird.
It was like stobbing out a cigarette. And Jimmy Stewart didn't mind. He was just playing the piano.
No.
And how about that refrigerator? Well, it wasn't even a refrigerator. It was an icebox.
Yeah.
How about that icebox full of fish? He's been gone all weekend. He's got all that other fish in there.
Mm-hmm.
That place is probably a little ripe.
And why are the walls always so dirty in these old movies? Is it because it's just such to be such a harsh white? It's
always so dirty.
Everybody
smokes.
Everybody smokes. And
bachelor,
you know, up there, you have a freezer full of fish. And I love to see the fact that no matter where you're at, you're going to walk in and see antlers.
Yeah, right.
And those antlers are going to be your coat rack. I'm like, okay, he's that guy. Yeah. Real quickly. The female lead here. I kind of take Hoodie's lead on this as well. She was almost a little too okay with being raped.
Yeah.
Did that bother you as well?
It did. Never knew what to believe. I mean, she played the coy little, not even, she wasn't a femme fatale, but, you know, just this coy vamp, you know, and it didn't seem to matter to her.
Did that affect the film in a good way? Because now you're thinking, okay,
no,
maybe this didn't happen to
exactly.
her, you know.
I mean, some people might take it that that's a good way because the ambiguity, if you're into that, I can see where that would play into that if that's what you enjoy. To me, it just, I never bought it from the jump. It's like, that's not somebody who's been raped. Either that or she's processing this traumatic event incredibly well.
Well, I thought she was hitting on Jimmy Stewart towards the end of the
movie. Yeah,
she was
a flirt.
Yeah, well, she was definitely
the whole
a flirt.
Towards
the
end of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
whole damn movie.
Yeah.
You know what we should do is take a break here. Wrap it up with one last clip from the film.
Now, Mr. Manning, I'm quite concerned about the lost panties. Would you describe this article of clothing to the court?
They were nylon and had lace up the sides. There was a label in them of the place I got them. The Smart Shop in Phoenix, Arizona.
What was the color of the panties?
I believe white.
You believe?
I have white and pink. They may have been pink.
You're not sure. Haven't you checked your lingerie to see which pair of panties is missing?
No.
When your husband came home late from his work, we had this little spat. Were you already dressed to go out?
No.
When did you dress?
After dinner, when he was asleep.
It's been stated here that you were bare-legged in the bar. Is that true?
Yes.
In your anger at your husband and your haste to get out of the trailer, perhaps you didn't put on any panties either.
Objection! Witness has already testified what she was wearing.
Sustained. Do you always wear panties, Mrs. Manion?
No, Your Honor, I object to this line of questioning. Now, it's immaterial what Mrs. Manion does all the time. And the night she was attacked, she was wearing panties, and that's all we're concerned with.
All right, let's check in with Clarence. Attaboy Clarence, we're talking about Adam. What do you guys say? You want to do that right now?
Yes.
I think it's time to let him give us his wrap-up, and we're talking about 1959's Anatomy of a Murder. We're talking about a fantastic podcast. I'm going to go ahead and plug it. I love this show. He talks about monochrome, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Old-time radio.
Yep.
And you talk about a smooth, creamy delivery. The guy has a hypnotic delivery. I really suggest you check this out. Attaboy Clarence at Atta, B-O-Y-C, on Twitter. That's his handle. You can go to his website as well, which is attaboyclarence.com.
Yep.
And so he's been a fan of the show for a while. We thought, you know what? Why not go to the expert witness here? Expert witness, and here it is. Adam, what you got on this one, 1959, Anatomy of a Murder. Who are you going to agree with?
Oh, thank you, Michael. Honored to be here. And hi to all. You're all looking well. So nice to see so much quality outerwear on display, apart from James really rocking the nipple tassels there. Well, you've pretty much dissected the whole thing. Just leftovers from me. Ben Gazzara's first film was actually The Strange One, 2 years earlier in 1957, which was also an issue movie in itself, dealing with college hazing and how the system crushes the individual. He played a real bully in the movie, and it almost became his stock in trade from then on. You mentioned Roadhouse, classic by the way, and I'm not joking, where he plays Brad Wesley, who's almost the same character. It's weird really, because Ben Gazzara was never the tallest man in the room, but he always seemed to be the most imposing. And by the way, is there any better piece of film dialogue than...
Pain don't hurt.
Idiot. Did you know that movie credits before Saul Bass were considered so unimportant that they were generally just projected onto the ruffled curtains of a movie screen, which didn't usually open until the feature presentation had started? Saul Bass basically revolutionized the credit sequence to such an extent with films such as North by Northwest and The Man with the Golden Arm and Vertigo that credit sequences became mini-movies in themselves, and it wasn't long before filmmakers were using the credits to create an atmosphere instead of just listing the workers. There's a scene in the movie where the clerk behind the desk of the hotel is reading Leon Uris's Exodus. Well, a year later, Otto Preminger would direct the movie adaptation of that book, which would be written by Dalton Trumbo, who was blacklisted at the time. Well, Preminger and Kirk Douglas, who was producing Spartacus at the time, were instrumental in breaking the Hollywood blacklist when they both announced that Dalton Trumbo had written their movies, which ultimately led to the dissolving of the blacklist. Coincidentally, as Max mentioned earlier, the judge in Anatomy of a Murder was played by Joseph Welch, who took on Joseph McCarthy at the Army-McCarthy hearings in 1954, when McCarthy tried to prove that communists were taking over the US Army. When McCarthy tried to insinuate that one of Welch's junior attorneys had been part of a communist front group in his youth, Welch famously cut off McCarthy and heroically bellowed,
"Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir?"
Real American hero. His portrayal in the film was so successful that he was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor and a BAFTA for Best Newcomer. Unfortunately, he died just 1 year after the film was made. Otto Preminger originally approached Lana Turner for the film, but Preminger and Turner didn't get on at all. He playfully slapped her back one day and she turned and socked him in the jaw. Then, to try and get out of making the film, she insisted that she'd only play the part if her personal dress designer could design the gowns. The studio were all set to agree, but Preminger argued them down, thank God. Jane Mansfield was considered next for the role, but she turned it down. Shame, as she'd have been perfect. The Lumberjack Tavern is still there today, but that's not all. The actual outline of the murdered body drawn in white by the police in the movie is still there, and tourists regularly lie in it to have their pictures taken. Anyway, all in all, great movie. A little too long, in my opinion. Should have been a little snappier. But groundbreaking in lots of ways, and a great yarn. Otto Preminger was a little chilly, in my opinion. You never really love the main characters in a Preminger film. Some people love that. Personally, I like to fall hard for my stars. There's no danger of that happening in a Preminger film. Arguably, the lead in Preminger's 1944 mystery, Laura, isn't Gene Tierney or Dana Andrews, but Clifton Webb, who's possibly the most acidic character actor who ever lived. Check out the Mr. Belvedere films if you don't believe me. He's a master of the withering put-down and really typifies a Preminger star for me. The things they say shock you into smiling, but you wouldn't want to live with them. Stroke of genius, though, putting Jimmy Stewart in the lead role. It was like asking Oprah Winfrey to go topless. It was kind of a mild desecration of a national treasure. It's weird to think of it now, but the language they used in Anatomy of a Murder was truly shocking to 1959 audiences. You had people walking out of screenings. Like Max said, it was banned in Chicago. The reason why the casting of Jimmy Stewart was such a stroke of genius is that, as James said earlier, Preminger liked to lean on the censors by testing their limits with each of his films. And while it would be perhaps wrong to say that Anatomy of a Murder was solely responsible for the end of the production code, it was certainly one of the whacks that made the piñata explode. The production code was being seriously eroded throughout the 50s, and even if you love or hate this film, you have to give it its place in history. Here you had the most wholesome American actor of his generation talking about sperm and rape and panties being torn off in a really natural way. You can't really equate anything to it nowadays. It'd be like Pixar making a film about an elephant who likes to f*** when it drops below zero, so to survive he has to f*** with a f*** up his f***. But of course the pumpkin doesn't fit in that way, so they have to till Mr. Snuffleupagus the with an Alsatian. Just one last thing, Max, it was Billy Wilder who directed Witness for the Prosecution. I've always loved that Billy Wilder made such a British film. And what a delight it is to see Charles Laughton and Elsa Lanchester playing such a crotchety old couple in front of the cameras for a change. My personal rating for Anatomy of a Murder is 7 panties. I'll leave it up to Max to use my panties or not to boost his Anyway, have a great November, guys, and you're all welcome to my show anytime. In fact, I'm having a few friends over for my Christmas special, so consider your invites in the post. Bye for now.
So there it is. Yeah, absolutely. Always precise, always spot on. Attaboy, Clarence. Thank you very much, Adam. We expected something like that, so no doubt about it. Thanks for filling in the gaps, so to say. All right, so you know what this is, Max Gumbo Johnson.
I do.
Yeah, we're talking about top threes.
Top threes?
Top three objections.
I do not object to that. Every show inspires a top three. You ready, producer?
I am. I'm ready to order into court. I'm hungry.
I am.
Order into court. I'm more curious to see what the objections are because right. We're going to let us define our own. And I'm going to go over to Max Gumbo Johnson to kick this one off. What are you objecting to, sir?
The past few years.
Sustained. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There's been a dearth of reboots, remakes, and I'm objecting to some of these. These are films that are either in the works, rumored, or have been in the works for several years, and I object to all of them.
Stand down, sir. Stand down. I will hold you in contempt.
I object.
Okay, all of them.
Overruled.
All of them. All right, well, give me your number three. I like the theme.
Number three?
Remakes.
Gremlins.
Oh, Gremlins.
Do not remake that.
Do not remake Gremlins. Not remake I object. That.
Okay, so this has not been remade. What you're saying is they're thinking of remaking this film, Gremlins.
Gremlins. Terrible. Does not need to be done.
No. Who would you object to the most in the lead role?
Any other Gremlin. Yeah.
No, they would be CGI Gremlins.
Yeah, they would be
CGI. It would be Andy Serkis as Stripe.
I don't want that. I do not want that. I object to that strongly.
Mutant Ninja Turtles did so well.
But those movies, I don't care. They can do whatever they want with the Mutant Ninja sarcasm. Turtles.
Yeah, that was sarcasm. Did you see? He already has his panties in a wad. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Get your knickers
in. Wait till I get my number one.
Well, let's go over to, let's go around the table this way.
All right.
I'm going straight to juror number two, and that is the producer, Adam.
Well, it was something, I'm not a big fan of the movie, but
yeah.
It's the fact that I took my 11-year-old nephew to see this.
Yeah.
Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, and they have the scene with we have robot scrotum.
Robot scrotum?
So you object to robot
object
scrotum?
I object to robot scrotum.
Sustained.
Rotum scrotum.
It's a movie for kids.
Wait a second. I'm going to overrule this. I didn't know that there was robot scrotum. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wrecking balls?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, the Destructicons.
Let me just step in here. What's your objection is? You do not like scrotums on robots. That's your number three?
No, it's...
That's not
putting
that.
Something like that in a film for little kids.
Okay. So your theme is inappropriate, objectionable things
I'll have a theme,
to kids.
Yeah.
Okay. I got number three is robot scrotum.
I object to those Transformers films in general.
Number three for you, Hoodie, and what is your objectionable objections?
It's getting crazy in here.
What is it robot scrotum?
I just realized I didn't pick any movies out. I just picked objections for random general objections in movies.
Hey, that works.
Yeah. First one is the CGI blood. What's that about?
That's stupid.
What is that? That's awful.
Yeah, that's
why
dumb.
Do it?
I don't understand.
I want an example before I can sustain this.
I'll throw over to Adam.
Land of the Dead.
Rambo, the last Rambo.
Oh, yeah.
The Expendables.
Terrible. Yes. Terrible.
You prefer the actual like corn syrup.
Squibs, yeah.
Squibs.
Yeah, it's
probably a lot cheaper, too.
Correct. Yeah, and it makes
it looks
better.
You don't need to have 20 gallons coming out of a guy's body.
Says Adam.
I know.
That's on tape.
Interesting. You hate fake blood. That is your objection.
No,
you
that's not what he said. He
CGI
said he
blood.
CGI blood.
You don't like CGI blood. That's your objection. Going over to Savage here.
I also
three.
Added fake explosions to that, but
it was tough for me. There were so many things I object to, so many films I object to. But I decided to go with this particular objection to films made from 80s video games, and I'll start with Double Dragon. Terrible. I object to that film. It's terrible.
Never seen
terrible,
it. Never played the game.
Terrible video game. Terrible movie.
There was a rash like in the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, we're
going
to get to it.
Video
we're going to get to it.
Mario Brothers. Okay.
Don't mention Street Fighter either.
All right. Number one. You want to know what my objections are? I come into this court. I come into this court with a mission, and that is to object to sequels.
Okay.
I'm not talking about remakes. You can handle the remakes, Max. I'm talking about anything that has the number two in back of it.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Rename the thing.
Yeah. I'm talking about sequels, and I'm talking about my number three being Caddyshack 2.
Oh, I so object.
I object to this film.
Sustained.
I so strenuously object to this film.
Sustained.
Why? Why did we need Caddyshack 2?
What's the best movie ever made about golf?
Caddyshack.
What's the worst movie ever made about golf?
Caddyshack 2.
There you go.
Moving along. That's my number three. Max, we're talking about straight up remakes, man. Ones that you object to. I object to this film. Number two, what's yours?
Videodrome remake.
Oh.
How could you?
Why would you?
Why? How? What is the purpose?
What if I told you I can't recall seeing video
games? Overruled. That one needs to be read.
Then you should watch it again. It's a fantastic film.
I'm a tainted juror at this point.
You are. We need to bring in the alternate juror here.
All right, so that's a strenuous objection to Videodrome being remade.
Would you remake that with anyone besides Cronenberg?
But I heard that Cronenberg was remaking that one, wasn't he?
Son of Cronenberg?
No, the Fly.
Son of Cronenberg. Oh, The Fly. Okay, that's it, The Fly.
Number two for you, Adam. You're talking about scrotums and movies. What's your number two?
Actually, it's pretty close to one.
What is it?
Oh.
The Blue Wang in Watchmen. Why did they have to put that in there? Who cares if it's in the comic
book?
I'm picking up a theme.
It's a rated R movie, though.
It's a giant codpiece.
Why did they really have to put that in the movie?
Because they didn't have a loincloth that big. And he really didn't seem to care. You know?
But it wasn't a kid's movie. It was rated R.
I know what it was rated R. But
I find it interesting that was distracting to you.
The Wang is his thing. That was like 80 foot of Wang.
I find that objection to be. I overrule that one. That's overruled.
Overrule. No. Adam, I'm going to overrule that. That's proper Wangage there.
That's three overrules.
Okay.
Savage didn't like it either, though.
Strike that objection from the record.
Not bad. I like the Wang thing. I like the scrotum thing.
No, terribly bad.
Hoodie, what's yours? You're talking about you don't like effects, I do believe.
That was one.
Just general objection.
And what's your general objection?
Rick Moranis' retirement.
Oh, totally.
I object.
That is fantastic. Did he retire?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Openly retire?
He says
I'm not making it. Yeah.
Wait a second. You're telling me he officially retired?
Yeah, years ago.
He hadn't been in a movie in what?
Damn it. Where is Rick Moranis? Where's 16, he been?
That's what
years?
I'm objecting to.
He's retired.
He's spending his money.
He hasn't done anything since 2006.
I think he was taking care of a wife.
He was taking care of his wife, and then after she died, he just said,
really?
I'm not going back in.
Okay, you know what? That is a fantastic objection.
Yeah.
He needs to grow a giant robot scrotum and get back in the game, is what he needs to do.
It's going
to
happen.
Yeah.
I've written him letters for years.
Oh,
didn't correct. Even occur to me. Rick Moranis no longer makes
I'm going to write him one, too, now.
We should write one together.
Yay.
How about James Hartsub Savage going along with number two here? And you're talking about what?
80s video games made into movies is never, never, never a good idea.
Yeah.
They failed again with Super Mario Brothers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Never saw it.
Terrible film.
Never saw all of it.
Okay. Interesting theme. You had me thinking about this. Yeah. Bad idea all the way around, right?
But just totally bad idea.
How much did they have to pay Dennis Hopper?
Well, making a movie off a video game in any era is not really a
great idea.
Okay,
wait a second. Was Dennis Hopper in that?
Yeah.
Film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was not.
Yes, he was. He was the villain.
Yeah, he was the villain.
What was his name? Pooka or whatever? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, he turned into Pooka the Dragon or something like that.
How'd they never make a Pac-Man movie?
Please, don't give him any ideas.
Okay.
It's in development. Yeah. Max objects to it.
Midway and Hasbro are listening.
We're up to your number one, man. And what is it?
Didn't you do your number one?
He's got to do your number two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Your number two.
So I object to myself. Number two, and I'm talking about bad sequel, anything with the number two in the back of it. I'm going to go with Exorcist 2. Okay? Hated that film. Why can't you just leave it alone?
I don't think anybody liked that film.
Why can't you just leave that alone? Exorcist 2.
Well, they come back around with 3.
The Heretic. I mean, come on.
Richard Burton, they thought he could sell it.
But why do we have to pig out on everything? Leave it alone.
Right.
Exorcist 2.
Terrible.
That's my objectionable straight-up sequel.
That is an objectionable film.
Sustained or overruled? You sustained?
Oh, yeah, definitely sustained.
Get on with your number one.
I think
it's
universally sustained.
Max, what's your number one? What's your number one remake?
That they shouldn't do.
Has pretty much been...
Oh, here we go.
This is happening. Paul Feig. That pansy is rebooting Ghostbusters with, I thought, what if it was an all-female cast? And then my mind just went crazy. Yeah, you know what? My mind went crazy, too. That is the worst idea ever. I object vehemently.
I object.
Yeah.
I object. Object. Yeah. Object. Oh, and guess what? They got the woman that wrote The Heat. Fantastic. Wow. My hopes can't get higher for this film.
All right, so...
So Ghostbusters, just don't do it. Just leave it alone.
All right, good enough.
Sustained.
Sustained.
Even Dan Aykroyd is probably like, all right, that's it. That's enough. Let it rest.
Adam, what about you? Number one, we're talking about robot scrotums.
No.
Or something like that. What are we talking about?
My number one objection to anything.
It's gotta be a butt.
Nope. Lens flares. Lay off the lens flares.
I knew that was coming.
What about you, Hoodie? We're up to number one. General objections, I guess. Overall objections.
Right. Working plot points into conversation. Drives me nuts.
Me too.
I can't stand it.
Yeah.
Anyone
remember
movie?
Big Trouble in Little China?
Yeah.
Mm.
David Lopan? The Recluse?
That. That's what I'm talking about.
That's bad stuff. Can't stand it.
Oh, my God. What about you, Savage? Wrap it up with your number one. What you got?
80s video games made into movies, and the quintessential one is Street Fighter.
Yeah, no doubt.
And the reason why...
It's awful.
It is terrible, terrible, terrible. But God rest his soul, it was Raul Julia's last film.
Mm-hmm. We've brought that up before.
He went out on that.
I'm up to my number one, and that is sequels. Anything that's straight up following up the lead. And this could go on and on.
There's a bunch of them.
You know what I'm going to? I'm going to go with the last one that irritated me. Lethal Weapon 3. I hate those things. They're terrible. I love Lethal Weapon, and it just got worse and worse and worse. If you revisit Lethal Weapon 3.
I haven't watched it in years.
It is the stupidest movie you've ever seen. Lethal Weapon 4 is even worse.
Was that the one with Joe Pesci?
Yeah, three and four. Terrible, terrible.
Yeah, but three was the first one with Joe Pesci. Yeah,
you talk about a shoehorning conversation in that just needs to be here inexplicably. Oh, yeah. That film is full of it.
Yeah.
It was like a freak show I watched, I think. I don't like the Lethal Weapon movies beyond the first two.
Okay, I'm with you.
I'll give you that.
You like that? Slightly sustained.
You even like maybe Lethal Weapon 2?
Yeah, that's one of the Cougarans, right?
I'm just making fun.
Yeah.
Wait, that's the one with
the sequel is what I'm saying.
South African people. Yeah, that was okay. But
what about the one with Jet Li?
That was four.
You know, I could have said Jaws the Revenge, but I didn't.
Terrible.
You could have gone Jaws. You could have said Jaws 2.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
roaring
crying out loud.
All right, guys, there it is. There's our top three film objections. Got to thank Clarence once again. Adam. I keep calling him Clarence. Yeah. Which, you know the tie-in here.
Jimmy Stewart.
Attaboy Clarence. There you go. Why didn't we pick up that earlier?
I didn't even think of it.
I think we did. I just didn't say it.
Right.
That's it.
So thank you for stopping by the queue. Time to go on to the big reveal. But first thing, actually, let's talk about what this score came out to, Max. I want to go up to 8 on mine.
Oh, let me get it.
Pump it up one more. I like this film. The more I think about it, I was tentative to do so. I think I toppled
they
over
put it
at
to 33.
33. So 33 panties for this film. And if you want to watch it, it's on Netflix.
It is.
You should watch it pantyless.
Yeah. If you got almost 3 hours to kill.
Yeah, if you can go cowboy for like 3 hours.
Cowboy.
Or if you want to spend two hours and 40 minutes, well spent.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. Get to Netflix, watch it. I think for the most part we can say it's, if you want to, we're not going to stop you. So now it's on to the big reveal, and that is, I think we're going, oh, by the way.
Yep.
Let's talk about this. I want to stomp this one out. We're talking about our walk of shame. This is where this one starts this week. We're talking about films that I'm ashamed to say I have never seen. That's the theme. Okay.
Right.
We're looking at Netflix. We're looking at these films. I've never seen this film. I feel shame.
It's like, what?
How have I never seen this film? I'm embarrassed to say I've never seen this
and
film.
And I called myself a man.
And you called yourself a man because you're going to lead this off, Hoodie.
Right.
Next week, you're starting this round off. Films that we're ashamed we've never seen on Netflix. What is yours?
I'm pretty ashamed to say I've never seen Sling Blade.
What?
Never.
Feel shame.
It's because everybody talked like it for so
inadequate.
Long, and it was so annoying.
Just
and
inadequate,
said,
yeah.
I'm never going to watch it.
Okay, so that's next week, Sling Blade.
We're I already hate
about...
it.
Stop it now, stop. You're talking about Billy Bob Thornton's directorial debut.
Yeah, yeah.
Carl.
Directorial.
A lot of hoomps and harms.
Absolutely. Directorial debut.
I reckons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1996, John Ritter.
I hate it.
Stop.
You haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
Give it
a chance, man. We'll even bring in some French fried potatoes for the episode.
All right. Well.
Are you partial to potted meat? What do you like? Never mind. Mustard
on. No clue what's going on.
Yeah, he has no idea. All right, so that's next week, 1996, Sling Blade. Some folks call it a Kaiser Blade.
That's what I heard. I call it a Sling Blade.
You guys have all seen this, then?
Yeah, many times.
Of course we have, man.
Yeah,
you feel shame.
I feel shame.
If you have TV in your house and it's plugged in, I don't see how you haven't seen it.
Well, don't worry. We'll all have our go.
Yeah. Sling Blade, 1996, Billy Bob Thornton. That's next week. Ashamed we have not seen, blah, blah, blah. That's the round. Hoodie leading it off. So that's it, and that's where this one ends. As always, thank you for tuning into the queue. If you'd like to offer your thoughts on this film or anything else, you just go to thequeufilmcast.net. Stop by. Tell us what you think. For certain, we love feedback, and that's at thequeufilmcast.net. Next week, Sling Blade. Going to cue it. Going to review it. And however it is you say, good night.
All the ladies in the club, take your panties off. Throw your hands up in the air with your panties off. Yeah, all you ladies in the club, take your panties off. Throw your
your hands up in the air with your panties off. What are you ladies in the club? Take your panties off. Throw your hands up in the air with your panties off. Yeah, all you ladies in the club, take your panties off. Throw your hands up in the air with your panties off. Panties over here and panties over there. Everywhere I look, there's panties in the air. All the ladies in the club, take